a movie about a boy and his dragon and the annual celebration of achievements in motion pictures, otherwise known as the Oscars, were two of the highlights of the last week. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The new installment in the How to Train Your Dragon franchise hit theaters, and the Oscars telecast overcame a host of issues, including having no host without being a train wreck. The Academy's choices in some cases are a different matter. Joining me to discuss a new film and a telecast honoring movies from 2018, I'm happy to have back on the program On Film contributor Jean Creel. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning.
Okay, let's get after it. How to Train Your Dragon, third installment.
Yes, this is the third and presumably final installment of the highly popular franchise from DreamWorks. Can we ever assume any film is the final installment?
Right.
Okay, anyway, our young Viking hero, Hiccup, and his trusty dragon, Toothless, are once again fighting the human forces of evil, bent on control and domination of the dragon population. But a particularly vicious villain has vowed to eliminate all dragons, so Hiccup and his motley crew are seeking a new hidden world where they can live peacefully, isolated from the rest of the world. A subplot complicating their quest is that Toothless has fallen in love. Mayhem, chaos, battles, and a good dose of humor ensue. DreamWorks has really pulled out all the stops on the animation, which is gorgeous, but I felt the trajectory of the story was rather cliched and hackneyed, but that may just be a common pitfall of a series.
Well, I'd have to disagree with you there, actually, because I was taken with it hook, line, and sinker.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and I think it was the animation, and particularly the character animation of these two dragons that are falling in love in the middle of this film that just sucked me in. It took my heart, and that rarely happens for me, frankly. I don't know about you, but anecdotally, something really interesting happened, too. I looked around the theater, and there was not a single child in the screening that I went to of How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, which was amazing, that it was a bunch of adults. And certainly kids should go see this film. But I feel like we're at a stage now with most animated films where there's enough maturity to the subject matter. And as you point out, the gorgeous animation in this film should be a delight to adults. So do not feel guilty going to buy a ticket even by yourself, if you don't have a kid in tow.
I agree. In fact, and as you said, they're all the people in the audience, which I attended to, all adults. Hmm. Now, it was a weekday, so that's part of it. But at the same time, as you say, personally, I have come to expect, if not demand, a certain amount of adult humor in so-called children's animated series. And again, I did love that courtship scene between Toothless and this beautiful light fury, the rituals that they go through. Again, it was the animation that was just spectacular.
So you were reacting maybe that the human story is divided up with a far stronger non-human story.
Exactly, right. That to me was much more engaging than the typical, you know, with the stock characters, the quest to find the big villain, all of that. It's all pretty much archetypal, and that's okay. But I guess it's not a Zootopia for me, and I do look for more in a story.
I hear what you're saying. It's amazing, though, to me that DreamWorks, as you point out, took so many risks with this, one of which being to move the franchise from a solely or mostly human-driven plot line, the trials of Hiccup, the young Viking, and give at least as much screen time to his not quite pet, but companion dragon, who cannot speak. This is not one of those films where the animals speak. And it's amazing what is conveyed in all of the scenes where there are no humans in those scenes.
That's
and the courtship that you mention is beautiful, the several scenes in which he is slowly falling in love with this other dragon, and how those two interact with one another, their character motion and movement, and these gorgeous backdrops that they move through. It just created an ecstatic wonder in me, the beauty of these scenes as they unfolded, and probably a high watermark for this franchise. And if we look at the entire franchise, it's perhaps one of the strongest trilogies we've seen in decades. There's not a weak part to this, I don't think.
Well, I must admit, I have not seen 1 and 2.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but...
Which is fine.
Right,
you don't
exactly.
have to with this film.
Right, yeah. My point was, you shouldn't have to have seen them, mm-hmm. really. It should not matter to a great extent.
Right.
In this case, there was enough backstory. I caught on, you know,
sure.
although the prosthesis was a little bit of a curiosity mm-hmm. for me on Hiccup. But overall, in retrospect, I thought I should have paid the extra money and watched it in 3D.
Really?
Uh-huh. I think I would have enjoyed it more because of what I thought was kind of a bland storyline.
Interesting. What's also interesting is the perspective of my 18-year-old son who
uh-huh.
went with us. He made the comment that he's grown up, and each time he sees these films, the character Hiccup is his age, basically. So as each film evolves, so do the characters in age and maturity. And there's a lot going on in this film about separation and the
and
letting go
uh-huh.
and moving on
right.
and all of that with both the dragon and the Viking protagonist having
couple.
To
uh-huh.
mature.
New stages in life. I think that's very wise of them to have aged the characters as they go along.
One thing, too, that takes me with these particular franchise is they did something very interesting way back when they started, which I guess was 8 or 9 years ago now, if we can believe that, is they hired one of the greatest cinematographers, Roger Deakins.
Yes.
As
he
a visual consultant
on
all three films. And they have a look to them and a cinematic sensibility in how they use very nuanced lighting and shading and darkness and brightness that is credited to his supervision of those, or at least his tutelage of the animators, that really I find I slip away from the fact that I'm watching an animated film at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, part of that is the gorgeous animation and the amazing character animation, but part of that as I watched is how people move in and out of shadow and light,
right.
dances across
the firelight scenes,
things,
and such.
Yes.
Right, uh-huh. And through the sky, the clouds. It was lovely, and when I saw Deakin's name in the credits, I was, whoa, that's really great. And, of course, DreamWorks has that beautiful new logo opening.
Oh,
and,
amazing.
You know, I'm a huge Pixar person, and so maybe DreamWorks has, you know, really turned a corner. I don't know.
Well, the good news is that we are in an age where we don't get 2 or 3 animated films a year. We get at least one a month now.
Pretty much.
and they're of pretty high quality. The bar is set
yes.
pretty high, and I really enjoyed this film, and I think it was an amazingly mature way to bring the arc to conclusion. And it does feel like there's some finality to it. Of course, it's Hollywood, so maybe there isn't. But
we'll see.
It works as a triptych. So go back and watch the first and second.
Okay.
So actually, I think How to Train Your Dragon: The Hidden World will be on this year's Oscar list. But
oh, for animation? Sure.
Since the Oscars...
Oh, I agree.
Perhaps it's the first film of 2019 that we can already say will receive an Oscar nomination. And, of course, the Oscar telecast just happened.
Yep.
So I thought we'd talk a little bit about that and recap last year, as a lot of the films that are being honored right now are out on home video and streaming. What did you think of the show, for one?
It was okay. I think it begged the question, and they may regret it, maybe not, was who needs a host?
Mm.
It moved right along. The presenters sort of took the place of little mini hosting, and it worked. It worked okay. I was kind of in and out listening and so on. So a lot of it seemed pretty predictable based on the earlier awards programs and such. But overall, it was okay.
You know, a lot of people think because of my love of film that I must love the Oscars, and it's only until the last few years that we actually watched the whole telecast.
I'm usually in bed before it's over.
I think if we can separate out the honoring of films from the actual making of a television show, for me, these awards shows are just not good television. It's really hard to get engaged with people one after another coming to a microphone and thanking a long list of people.
So for me,
there you strain and wait for the surprise moments, of which there's usually some, and there were in this telecast. I think Olivia Colman winning
yes.
Best Actress over the favorite Glenn Close. While I would have gone with Glenn Close, Olivia Colman, it's great to see someone who's truly surprised that they
she
just
was.
Won.
And that look.
And you get a moment, a glimpse into this person as an actual person, not someone who's prepared to deliver a thank you speech. And though she stumbled around a bit, it was heartfelt. It was beautiful. Rami Malek was a bit that way for Bohemian Rhapsody. He, I think, a bit of a surprise also, winning for his portrayal of Freddie Mercury over someone like Christian Bale for Vice, which I think most of the betting was that it would go that way. And so you get these little glimpses during that. And, of course, Spike Lee winning his first Oscar, you know, that was an important moment, I think.
It was.
And to see our own Ron Stallworth from El Paso up there on the stage with him.
Black Klansman.
El Paso has a good connection. So there are these moments. But I thought we would turn to maybe a couple of recommended titles that should have been nominated but weren't as we close out our 2018 viewing book. Or there's a film last year that you just thought, you know, was completely overlooked and people have to go see because it's out on streaming now.
Gosh, there were several when I started reviewing, and I wound up with four, and I thought, I've got to whittle the list. What really stood out for me, for one, quite frankly, was the Sisters Brothers. I love the Western genre, and I love to see foreign directors take on that classic American film genre. And this was directed by one of my favorite French directors. The two brothers are actually hitmen, and it's set in the West. Joaquin Phoenix and John C. Reilly, who's always so marvelous. It's just an edgy film, funny but very dramatic and violent. But I'm a Western person.
Well, you mentioned Joaquin Phoenix, and one of my highlights of last year was Lynn Ramsey's very artful and very dark You Were Never Really Here, starring Joaquin Phoenix as a returning war vet with PTSD who really throws himself into creating new missions where he finds abducted children. And the subject matter can be fairly nasty, but Lynn Ramsey puts that all to the side, and it's really this character study of this man on who's compelled to try to save people with flashbacks to his experience of not being able to save a young person in the war. And it's strikingly minimalistic. The scenes of violence and abuse are implied and handled off-screen largely, but it's an amazing confluence of acting and pacing and score and visuals. And so I highly recommend, for those looking for something a little darker, You Were Never Really Here with Joaquin Phoenix.
Right. So. Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix, he's on a new arc. He's riding high.
Well, lots to keep talking about. Cinema conversation continues, and I hope our listeners will keep exploring some of the best films of 2018, whether they had Oscar's seal of approval or not. Thanks, as always, for chatting with me today, Gene.
Oh, thank you.
My guest today has been Frequent on Film contributor Gene Creel. We've been discussing the new film, How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, which completes a very rewarding trilogy arc. And we had some thoughts about this year's Academy Awards and a few suggestions for Oscar-worthy but unnominated films. A final program note, the Film Salon will present the 1948 fantasy drama The Red Shoes, considered a Technicolor masterpiece from the famed British filmmaking duo of Michael Powell and Emmerich Pressburger. The film screens tonight at 6:30 p.m. at Alamo Drafthouse Cinema, and tickets are just $5. On Film's engineer is Seth Van Meter. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.